Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We have a guest that's going to be on with us this morning, and many of you have already seen the petition that's been out there for him. His name is Carlos King, wrongfully convicted. I want to talk a little bit about this before he comes on, and I also want to say we as advocates and also love family members of loved ones who are incarcerated and friends, we want to see changes. And one of the things that's most important to see these changes is for everyone to start promoting voting rights to be restored for our incarcerated men and women. Unless these voting rights are restored, we are not going to see many changes at all. Prisoners have a right to be able to vote because they are American citizens. We remember what happened at the Capitol on January 6th. These were people who were in the military, U.S. citizens, who tried to destroy their own Capitol. These were people that were trying to destroy their own country. Yet, they still have their voting rights, while the voting rights of our incarcerated men and women who have done nothing to this country are having their rights taken from them. In order for us to see criminal justice reform, in order for us to see these prisoners, these incarcerated individuals, men and women, have a fair shot at being released, many wrongfully convicted, many first-time offenders of a first offense, many who were victims before becoming offenders. We need to look at these things. And there are so many things that are being done out there in the communities. Yet, these prisoners, if they had their voting rights, we're looking at 2.3 million people incarcerated in prisons and jails. We're looking at family members. We're looking at friends. And we're looking at advocates. Think of the changes that could be made if we were all in unity to fight for the voting rights to be restored of these incarcerated men and women. Their voting rights were never taken from them in Maine. And there's another state that has never taken their voting rights. So if those two states can continue to have these prisoners maintain their voting rights, we should be able to promote it. We should be able to push for it so that these individuals throughout the country can vote to save their own lives, to have a chance at being free. Now, we are going to have Carlos King on with us, and we want him to tell his story because he is one of many who have been wrongfully convicted, who have received unjust sentences, and who are in prison when they should be out in the communities doing the productive work they intended to do. So we are now going to bring on with us Carlos King, an incarcerated individual whom in 1992 and at the age of 19 was sentenced to 50 to 75 years in prison for an armed robbery. Carlos, a young black male at the time, was full of anger and pain. There was much going on in his life. And as many individuals in the communities and in prison are unable to express their feelings and subsequently acted out in a negative way that eventually led to his incarceration. However, throughout the years of his incarceration, maturing and struggling to be a better person, Carlos has achieved so many of his goals, and he is here today to talk about it. So let's welcome our guest, Carlos King. Carlos, are you on with us?
Yes, ma'am. Good morning, Leona. How you doing?
Good morning, Carlos. How are you doing? I'm honored to have you on, and I'd like to have you introduce yourself to the audience and tell them a little bit about what you've been through prior to and during incarceration. And also your achievement.
Well, my name is Carlos King. I've been in prison since the age of 19, but I've been incarcerated since the age of 18. In 1991, I've been in prison ever since. Today, I'm a 48-year-old black intelligent man. And when I came into prison, I was a 19-year-old immature male that didn't have no education, that had no resources, that had no self-esteem, didn't have no self-love. Every day in prison, the main question that somebody would always ask me is, how do you get through? How do you make it through such terrain when we have 50 years, we don't have really nothing to look forward to. And every day, I work to convince myself that this nightmare would eventually end. That I would wake up one day with my mother's arms wrapped around me, telling me, baby, you was just dreaming. But every day that I wake up and my eyes see nothing but bars, I realize that I'm still within the nightmare. And the hug that I thought was from my mother was only a reminder of how long this nightmare has been going on. You know, the never-ending agony that sweeps consistently through me has robbed me of sleep, comfort, and most of all, joy. The pain of 30 years of incarceration has numbed me on so many levels, especially when I shouldn't be in prison after an 8-year sentence that the judge was supposed to give me. And I still possess to this very day that my sanity is intact, that, you know, prison, you know, it didn't mentally mess me up, and, you know, that I'm still Carlos, the father, that enjoys talking to his son, that enjoys being there for my nieces and my nephews, that enjoys writing articles and pieces to help encourage others to do positive work. But as I think about all the positives, and trust me, Leona, there are many, the inherent truth is prison is not only my reality, but the cause of my greatest dissatisfaction. This nightmare of prison has truly affected everything about me. I have faced my greatest fear, battled my strongest opponent. I found my greatest love. I cultivated my purpose and self-worth. So then a person should ask, well, it sounds like you found yourself. You found manhood and maturity in prison. Well, I did find manhood in prison and maturity, but I wouldn't tell somebody to come to prison to find those things. I should have been afforded those things when I was growing up in a poverty-stricken neighborhood, being passed on in the fifth grade with RD because the school system wanted me out of their school because they felt like I was incorrigible. They never sat me down and talked to me, so they just passed the problem on to the next teacher, whom never got it right, whom forced me to drop out of school in the seventh grade because they didn't care about where I was going and what I was going through. And because of those choices, I ventured off into crime. First, I started stealing cars. Stealing cars led to breaking in houses. Breaking in houses led to selling drugs. Selling drugs led to robbing people. All those things, in my opinion, could have been prevented had I had the tools to effectively deal with my struggle. But I didn't have those tools. Those tools wasn't afforded to me as a youth growing up. People never really wanted to go beyond my surface to understand what was going on, what was the real problem, what was underneath the pain that you openly displayed, what was inward. Didn't nobody go beyond the surface to try to understand the internal Carlos. They just dealt with the behavioral Carlos. Oh, he's a problem. I don't want him around. He can't come over my house. He can't do this. He bad. He never going to get it. But they didn't know I was really suffering inside from abuse, from lack of a father, from poverty, from pain, from self-esteem, from peer pressure. I was suffering on so many levels as a kid, and I ain't had no tools to handle that. So coming to prison, it was like more of the same. Abuse, struggle, pain, people giving up on you. I never even knew what the term out of sight, out of mind meant until I came to prison. Everybody I thought had a relationship with me, whether it was friends and a whole lot of my family members, they turned their back on me. They wasn't there for me. I can count on my hands the family members who's consistently been in my life, or the friends. I only have one friend that's been in my life since I was 15, and she's still in my life to this day. But other than that, all the friends that I thought I had, they disappeared when the judge gave me 50 years. Every time I would pick up the phone and try to call on somebody to help me, to send me a $20 money order or a letter of encouraging words. My calls weren't accepted. My letters weren't returned. So I fell into darkness in prison. It was easy for me to fall into darkness in prison and become the very thing that led me to prison in the first place. I didn't change my behavior. I didn't change my thinking. Because now, from the pain that led me here, I experienced more pain. And this pain affected me more because, you got to understand, I had real relationships with these people. I had real love for these people, you know. And then I thought in prison that I was worthy of the sacrifice. I was worthy of these people, you know, being in my life no matter what I did. But that didn't happen. So when they slammed the door on me, everybody slammed the door on me. I didn't understand that I had to go through. But losing my friends and family members was made me very bitter in so many aspects of my life. And then, you know, I can talk about my bitterness all day long, whether it's catching misconducts or, you know, going to segregation or, you know, fighting. But the thing I wanna share with people today is, although I suffer in prison, although I feel pain of loneliness in prison, I found so many things in prison that has allowed me to overcome the struggles of my life. And I would like to say, I like to turn it. The tragedies of my past became treasures of my life. And I turned it like that because I had a whole life of tragedy moments. But I don't want to think, I don't want to put it in the idea in my head that that's all I will ever be or that's what all will ever happen to me is the bad moments. And though mass incarceration is wrong, they lock us up at alarming rates. They don't give us no education. They don't give us no rehabilitation. They don't give us no nothing that empower you, to strengthen you, so you won't come back to prison.
Carlos,
I
would like to ask you to tell the audience, if they were to be able to help in any way at all with the incarcerated individuals, please tell them how they could help. Some of the things, there's a lot of people that say they don't know what to do. But I'd like to have you tell the people in the audience and anyone else who listens, anyone, especially around these holidays, when they should try to do something that's really worthy. Because they celebrate with Christmas presents. They forget the real meaning of Christmas, and that was the death of the Christ Jesus, who came into this world not to look for the elite, not to look for the wealthy, not to buy gifts, but to look for those who are lost and forgotten. So can you please tell the audience what you would suggest, what you would like to see them try to do to help?
People don't understand that every day it's a process. Monday through Friday, every incarcerated person lines up for mail. Mail is one of the most important things you can get in prison because mail reminds you that somebody cares for you. They are the evidence that you exist no matter where you at. Being able to receive a letter, even if it's three lines on the letter, does so much to humanize you. People may think in society that it's always about sending our incarcerated some money or accepting the cause. No, we want somebody to care for us in a way that shows us that we matter despite our choices, that we able to make ourselves better. The Bible teaches us, be ye transformed by the renewal of your mind. I would like to think that means when you change your thinking, your circumstance, it becomes a reflection of
you. Have 1 minute.
I hope.
And when your circumstances
remaining.
When your circumstances reflect those thoughts, then you are able to reap the benefits of it. Not the bitterness and the anger and the pain that led you to this place, but the humanity and the compassion and the love that people send you while you're in this place. Because if you understand prison, then you understand real darkness. You understand real suffering. But by believers of God, we understand that even in darkness, there's a light that exists. Even in the ugliest situations, beauty emerges in a letter. A letter that's saying, I'm thinking about you. I love you. These holidays ain't the same without you. I wish you was here. I wish I could put my arms around you and hug you and kiss your face. Those things humanize us. Those things put a smile on our face. So no matter what we got going on in prison, those things save us.
Thank you for using GTL.
Okay, Carlos will be calling back, unfortunately, in the prison system, the penal system. When prisoners are allowed to call out to anyone, they only have 15-minute intervals, and then they have to wait another 15 minutes to a half an hour sometimes to come back on again. But what Carlos was talking about, especially this time of the year, is how important it is for letters, for cards, just to let these people know that they are humans. Because once incarcerated, they're treated like objects. They're called by numbers and nicknames. They're not treated humane. And this is the time of year, if any of you really want to celebrate December 25th for Christmas, or even any other holiday that the Jewish or the Kwanzaa or Hanukkah or whatever, any other holiday that you celebrate in the month of December, use it to try to connect with the prisoner. Try to connect with prisoners. Write letters, write cards. And it's easy because all you need to do is find out. You can go on the government sites and find out who's in prison. You can go on the internet and find out people that are incarcerated and just write them. But he was also talking about how prior to going to prison, when he was growing up, he was always made to feel like he wasn't going to go anywhere. He wasn't going to do anything with his life.
Thank you for using GTL.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes.
That was quicker than I thought. I thought I had just let the audience know you had to wait 15 minutes to a half an hour, but this is good. So we will pick up with Carlos because he has limited time, and then we can pick up after he has to leave. So, Carlos, could you please finish what you were talking about?
So those simple things makes a huge difference in the life of an incarcerated. I once read a book, Just Mercy, and I remember Brian Stevenson. I don't know if y'all say it, but he wrote the book Just Mercy. He fight for the death row inmates in Alabama. He got a nonprofit organization called EJI, Equal Justice Initiative. And I remember something he said that stuck with me. He said that we are all implicated when we allow other people to be mistreated. An absence of compassion can corrupt the decency of a community, a state, and a nation. Fear and anger can make us vindictive and abusive, unjust and unfair. Until we all suffer from the absence of mercy and we condemn ourselves as much as we victimize others. The closer we get to mass incarceration and extreme levels of punishment, the more I believe it's necessary to recognize that we all need mercy, we all need justice, and perhaps we all need some measure of unmerited grace. And I say that, and I believe that because every day I see it. I see how a simple letter or a simple phone call changes the dynamics of a man's mind that's been trapped in prison for 20, 30, in 40 years. I'm surrounded by guys who wake up every day with a situation that's so bleak, and yet they still fight as if they're coming home tomorrow.
Can I just interrupt you 1 minute? You mentioned Brian Stevenson. Real quickly, I want to let the audience know, if you want to help, this is another way you can help. Brian Stevenson, John Legend, Van Jones, these are all individuals who are activists for the incarcerated. So even try to get in contact with any of them, Brian Stevenson, Van Jones, and John Legend, and let them know that you are in support of what they're doing and that you would also like to help. provide them with the support they need so that they can continue on and also join forces with them to try to do this criminal justice reform, which is very much needed and long overdue. Go back to what you were saying, Carlos. I'm sorry to keep interrupting.
And that's another thing that we realize by being in prison. We realize in prison the significance of time that a lot of people in society take advantage of. We do not take advantage of time. We understand that time is so precious. And we understand this because everything we do is controlled, whether it's using the bathroom, going to the telephone, taking a shower. We have no act on our own accord that's not regulated by the Michigan Department of Corrections. But the only thing that we do have that they can't touch, they can't harm, is our spirit and our mental. So when people reach out to us with humanity, it warms our heart. It opens us up and allows for us to express the degree of our suffering so that we can prevent other young people, or anybody for that matter, from experiencing this everyday torture that's so entrenched inside of us that produces the kind of anguish, the kind of resentment, and the kind of pain that was designed to do by mass incarceration.
I'll tell you, you mentioned, I was telling the audience earlier, you mentioned how when you were growing up, you were taught to or made to think that you were about nothing and that you weren't worth anything. And I want to say real quickly, and you mentioned that that it was happening in the schools as well. I want to mention real quickly that I had a couple of brothers who the same thing were talked down to and told by the school or made to feel like they weren't worth anything, and they ended up dropping out of school in the 11th grade. Back then, they were able to join the military. They not only went to Vietnam, but they came out as veterans of the Marines. But that's another way of pressing. They took away that opportunity for many young people coming out of school. Unless you have a high school diploma or a college degree or in college, you cannot join the military, which means that these children, these youth, and these young people that are dropping out of school have nowhere to go. They used to also have the CETA program, which allowed people that did drop out of school or low-income people or whatever to get jobs through the CETA program, where the businesses paid so much and the government paid so much. Again, that was taken away in the era of Ronald Reagan. So every time people are made to feel like they're about nothing, in every program or opportunity that they have had to do something to show their productivity, they are denied because these programs are soon cut, or they soon end, or they soon change the policies. So that's why I say, Carlos, with the work that you're doing while incarcerated, and a lot of times prisoners are rehabilitating themselves. They're doing the correspondence courses. They're doing anything that they can to earn their degrees, because it's not the budget that's given to the Department of Corrections around the country to help these individuals. These individuals, the majority of them, are rehabilitating themselves, are making something of themselves on their own. Once again, Carlos, it's your talk.
So speaking about what you just spoke about, you gotta go deeper than that, right? And I didn't know how deep that went until I came to prison and I started reading many books. I didn't know why my conditions were like they were, right? And then what I realized by reading books, I think that our conditions create a systematic ideological tool that was designed to keep us in the subservient position. If we can identify who the real target of our frustrations lies as, then how can you overcome it? How can any person be so blind about what has been happening to black people for what seems like forever? How can you not be concerned with mass incarceration that has removed black men and women from their communities at great force? How can poverty and the lack of real subject matter not be on the terms and within the actions of every black person that is a part of this system? Have have we let material value outshine our integrity and our objective to serve the best interests of our people at all costs, that the acts of our previous history will reflect our future? How can we not see that no matter how much wealth we have accumulated as individuals, our people are still suffering at alarming rates? Regardless of our status in the world, we are still subject to the same injustices. We are still subject to the main prejudices that limit our ability to move freely about. Are black people looking at two entirely candidates? Is this the question that I ask myself? Just because I'm incarcerated, does that mean I'm worthless? Have we forgotten that we were enslaved? Have we forgotten that we were prevented from reading and writing? I'm surrounded by guys right now that can't even read. I mean, when I say they can't read, they can't read. Everything they get, any piece of paper that is given to them, they got to give it to somebody else, another inmate, to read it for them because they can't read it for themselves. But these are the histories of our grandfathers, great-grandparents, and so forth. So you think about the conditions of the community, the decadence that exists within the communities, and you ask yourself, how does it exist? Well, it exists because it was intended to crush you, to crush your spirit, to crush your energy, and to crush your creativeness. So if you ask me, Carlos, what happened to you? How did you find yourself in such positions? It's because I was ridiculed as a dark-skinned, poor individual. I was ridiculed by my looks. I was ridiculed because I didn't have the right type of clothes. I was ridiculed because I didn't have the right type of behavior to exist on certain levels. I was ridiculed because I didn't have mannerism. I was ridiculed because I didn't have a father. I was ridiculed because I was just poor, very poor. Mother was on welfare. We didn't have nothing. So you think about the things that I went through, the things I was afraid, I was scared, even knowing that I was poor. I was still afraid to go into a store with a food stamp to get some food. Because I didn't want somebody else. I was already being tormented by the other kids. So I used to hide and wait until everybody left the store to pull out a food stamp and say, this is what I needed. Or I had to go to the corner store and say, well, we need some lunch meat and we're going to pay you at the end of the month or the beginning of the month. So you think about poverty. You think about what poverty did to me. I didn't have the strength like my sister and brother to do the right things, to go to school, to finish school. I didn't have the courage that they did. I didn't have the knowledge and the information and the passion that they did. I was the middle child. So what they was being told, I didn't believe in because I was seeing a whole different picture. The picture I was seeing, I was trying to feed myself. I was tired of eating ketchup sandwiches, mustard sandwiches. You think I'm playing? This ain't no joke. Sugar sandwiches. I was poor. And I didn't like it at all. It wasn't comfortable. No matter if you experienced it, no matter what you went through, it was hell for me, and I didn't like it. So I did something about it. Whether it was going into a neighbor's house and stealing the pork chop off their plate because I was trying to feed myself because I was hungry, or going to a teacher's purse and stealing some money to feed myself because I was hungry. I didn't care who was affected by my actions because didn't nobody care about me. So I did things that probably I shouldn't have. But going through what I went through, I made no excuses, and I didn't care who didn't like it. So what, because you was going to shame me? I've been shamed already. So what, because you said I couldn't come around? I couldn't come around already. So within my own hell, I produced my own truth. Even when my truth went against everything that was right, to me, it made sense because I was eating and I was able to put myself in a better position for me.
You know, that's the thing. We look at the pain and sorrow and suffering, the persecution, the affliction, the opposition that so many people of color especially go through. And then we look at the humility that goes beyond that. There are so many people in this country that are so bent on being somebody and on their pride in all of these things, where they look down upon prisoners. They look down upon anybody that's different from them, that is not at their level. But what they fail to realize is every experience we go through that's negative, like you're talking about right now, It brings humility, first of all. You have that humility. It brings determination to do as best as you can to show people that you are productive, that you are somebody, that you are a person that can achieve just as they can achieve, even while behind bars. So all of the negative things that people have tried to do to bring people down that are incarcerated, it's not going to work. And Carlos, I wish you had the time that I could play a video that was made by a Caucasian male about how the whites try to destroy the blacks and the people of color, and how these people have to be God's chosen ones, because as much as they have tried to destroy the people of color, they always come back much stronger than ever. And this man is a white man that believes now that all the oppression that they have done to the prisoners, to the black people, to the brown, red, and beige, that these are people of God. And these people are being destroyed by people who think that they're better, but they don't realize it. In the Bible, it says the last will be first. And we are at those days. We are at those days right now where it's coming to its end, and we see things are starting to turn around. So
right.
I just wanted to bring that up so that people will know.
Well, I'm evident.
You have 1 minute remaining.
I'm gonna call right back, so don't even worry. I'm evidence of what you just talked about. When you say you've been beaten into the ground, sir, fall down. But yet still God places something inherently in me that only I had to discover. It was always there. I just had to find somebody to connect the dots for me. Once somebody connected the dots for me, my light turned on, and it had yet to dissipate. It had yet to fade away. And what I mean by that is everything that somebody's done to me, I've been turning into a positive. Right now, today, yes.
I love you.
I love you too. I'm going to call back. Right now, today, I realize that I am in prison, but I'm more than the worst things I've ever done. Right now, today, I'm educated. Right now, today, I mentor the youth.
Thank you for using GTL.
Carlos will be calling back, and apparently his fiance wanted to let him know she loved him in case he didn't call back. But he will be calling. Yeah.
This is his sister, honey. How
I'm
you?
Sorry. It's his sister. Want to give your name again. I'm sorry.
Aisha.
Aisha, I am so sorry. I wanted to play this video, but I don't know if Carlos will, I don't know if we'll have time for him to hear it. But I want the audience to hear it.
Can only be explained by the continuing reaction and obstruction that they cannot get out of the habit of. They're still obstructing. The Obama presidency, even though Obama is no longer president. Go figure. Thank you. My name is Frank Schaefer.
Okay, we got the ending of that. Let's see if we can get the beginning.
My name is Frank Schaefer, a one-time religious rights activist in the 1970s and 80s with my evangelist father, Francis Schaefer, and now I guess you would describe me as a liberal activist. Doing my bit in the resistance to the worst president this United States has ever elected in my lifetime, certainly. That includes Richard Nixon, and that is Donald Trump. But, you know, as we talk about impeachment and hearings and Russia and Putin and corruption and the nepotism of his family and Breitbart.com and all these other people, let's not lose track of something. The only reason Donald Trump is president is because we had a black president. And the resentment of the white oligarchy and the racist and the xenophobic white evangelicals who designed an entire Christian school.
Okay, we have Carlos back on with us, and we don't have time to play this whole video because of the limited time that he has. So we're going to finish up with Carlos. You want to finish what you were saying, and I know that you don't want to waste your time listening to this video, but I want the audience to hear it at some point in time, perhaps after.
But a lot of people say, you know, they don't want to talk about their past. You know, they want to say that, you know, that's I'm far beyond that. That don't matter. But my past is relative, and I don't mean to offend anybody that I offended, whether it was family member or friend. I didn't mean no offense. But my past is relative because my past enabled me to be who I am today. And who I am today is a reflection of the light that God placed inside of me, even in my darkest moments. So when I speak about I needed somebody to connect the dots for me. When I came to prison, I was uneducated. I continued to perpetuate the violence and the pain and the anger and the frustration that I carried within me while in prison. But one day, somebody said something to me that never left my head. He was basically telling me that I could be more, even though I had a 50-year sentence. So I started thinking. He gave me my first book. I never forget the first book I ever read in prison. I ever read in my entire life that had some subject matter was As a Man Thinks by James Allen. That was the first book I ever read in my life. Because it taught me this one line that was so key to me. He said, as a man thinks, so is he. And as he continued to think, so he remained. So basically, it takes me to Romans 12:2 when I said, being transformed by the renewal of your mind. I knew that I could be more if I just changed my thinking. So I started going to school. I got my education. I got my GED. That was a proud moment for me. Because remember, I dropped out of school in seventh grade. Being educated in my hood, doing what I did, wasn't popular. Everybody was out of school that I hung around with. We were smoking weed. We were drinking. We was partying. Nobody concentrated on what was really going on. Nobody paid attention to why we was poor. We only paid attention to what's the solution not to be poor. We didn't look at the bigger pictures because we were stuck in this microcosm that we could never see the macrocosm. These are the things that hinders us, especially young, poor black men and women. These are the things because we don't know how to see the big picture because the big picture is not shown for us. We just showing trinkets, and these trinkets ain't enough to inspire change. It ain't enough to be consistently developed within us so we don't see it, right? So coming to prison, I put myself in a position where I wanted to transform. And I started with myself. First of all, I stopped blaming people. I stopped blaming people for the choices that I made in my life. I stopped blaming myself for being poor. It wasn't my fault. I was born into it. So it's something I had to deal with. I stopped blaming myself for people picking on me because I was poor or people talking about me because I was too dark-skinned and my lips was too big or my head was too big. I stopped blaming myself because it wasn't my fault.
But it's called
being
wrongfully convicted before committing an offense. People in your situation and so many others have been wrongfully convicted from day one because of the pigmentation of their skin.
Yes. I was victimized. I was a victim. I was a victim long before I committed a crime.
Exactly.
But again, I didn't know that I was a victim because didn't nobody teach me that. I didn't have the mathematics to understand my victimization. You understand what I'm saying? And only found that when I came to prison. And when I came to prison, I found so many things. Not only did I get my GED, I became a Braille transcriber. I transcribed Braille for the visually impaired for 9 years. I taught that, certified in 2 levels at the Library of Congress. I'm certified in paralegal. I'm certified in Microsoft Word, PowerPoint, manhood responsibility, NAA. Anything you can think of, I done accumulated in prison. But that means very little.
Well, no, can I say one thing real quick? And I hate to interrupt you now. What you just said, all the things that you just said, goes to show you that when man tries to do something evil to cause you to be in prison for all these years, God turns it around to make it possible for you to help so many people while you're behind those bars. See, the man, a lot of times people don't realize when they try to oppress or they try to persecute God's children, regardless of age, gender, race, or religion, when they try to persecute God's children, God finds a way to help those children of his succeed somehow. And even though,
even though you
were remorseful of what you did to bring you to prison, but look at all the good that you've been doing since you've been in prison. I want the audience to hear this because they need to hear this. They need to hear what people are trying to do. Carlos King went from being a boy to a man. He went from being a boy to a man. And look at all the work he's been doing for God. So listen, people. Throw all that judgmental attitude away. Don't listen to the media. Don't listen to the government. Because the government is making money off of these incarcerated individuals. Prisons for profits. So listen to what this man is saying. Because it's not only with Carlos King, it's going to be with so many others, and it may be your children someday if it's not stopped before then.
All right. So let me say this real quick, Leona, and I'm glad you spoke about that. So God saved my life. And then when I say this, I want you to understand, because people are going to say this next thing I'm going to say, that's kind of crazy. God saved my life, and I'm going to tell you why he saved my life. God worked through man for the benefit of man. So God had to work instrumentally through people to reach me because I couldn't reach myself, right? So when I first came through the judicial process to deal with the judge who gave me a 50-year sentence where my guidelines was only 3 years to 8 years in prison, God worked through this individual. And let me tell you why. The guy violated my constitutional rights and gave me a sentence, right? I'm finna get out of prison because he violated my constitutional right. But the plus is I'm surrounded by guys with 2 and 3 natural life sentences that may never walk out of prison, right? So I humble myself to know that I don't got 2 and 3 natural life sentences. I'm gonna walk out of prison. But when I say he gave my guidelines was 3 to 8 years, you know why I was 8 years into my incarceration, Leona? I was in the maximum security prison. I wasn't ready to be free. Had I did them 3 years and got out of prison, I would have came back to prison or I would have got killed. Right? So that was one instance where God worked through man to save me. The next instance where he worked through man to save me, he brought a man of resource, value, manhood, responsibility, and intelligence to my doorstep. This man was capable to dig inside me to help me excavate my pain so that I can deal with it and become a different human being. God worked through me, worked through man for the benefit of me. And now he's working through people right now. They've circulated a petition to help me get out of prison. The petition has been posted for 9 days, and already 1,587 people have signed this petition to get me out of prison. That means God is working through these people to help me out of prison.
Amen.
So when I think about the things, I don't wince or cry. The reason why I don't wince or cry, Leona, is because I know my conditions can be a whole lot worse. I could still be in prison uneducated. I still could be in prison ready to get out of prison to commit some more crime. I still could be in prison doing drugs and killing myself. I still could be doing bad things in prison because I'm surrounded by people that do. So when I say that God worked through man for the benefit of man to save my life, I'm telling you, every stage, every level of my dissatisfaction, there was God. Every time that I thought it was just too dark enough, there was God. Every time I turned around and thought I was alone, there was God. So when you think about the work I've done, I have taken his benevolence. I have taken his mercy, and I have extended it to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know why? Because he filled me up. So I've mentored the youth. I created programs. I wrote curriculums. I got a curriculum I wrote that I use and help the youth right now called Saving Our Youth from GDP, Saving Our Young People from Gangs, Death, and Prison. I created a 3P system, participation, practice, and patience. And the reason why I did these 3P systems, because I understood when I was that age what I needed in my life. Right? And I speak about how we, as older people, how we must reach the youth. We can't reach the youth by beating them down with our words. We only reach the youth by listening to their suffering and pain. We can't get the youth to come around to our right side if we ain't being consistent and we ain't being loving and we ain't leading by the right example. We got to stop teaching, do as I say and not as I do. We got to be their example because they paying attention. And you better believe it. Once they see a bad action, that's going to, ha, I knew that was going to come out. Ha, I knew it was just a matter of moments, right? And these are the things that I experienced in my youth. So I try to utilize the dissatisfaction that I accumulated in my pain to give it to the young people so that they can have a better and bright future. I'm surrounded by young men right now that seek me out on a regular basis. They seek my advice. They want to come talk to me. They come get my books because I got so many books in there. I read so many books. They want to read my books, but they encourage. So when they around me, their conduct is above board. They want to do better, whether they want to get their education, they want to change their thinking, or they want to better their relationships with their family. I can help them, and I do help them because I truly believe that it appears that we run when we should stand and fight. We lose hope when our faith should be impenetrable. We give up on the incarcerated when we should utilize every resource at our disposal to the system. Truth is not only law, but an essential component that gives us the courage to make good decisions in our lives. We should never be afraid to make improvements that will give us the greatest opportunity to be successful in our quest to free them in prison. Everybody in prison is not no maniac, no psychopath, and no monster. You can't get your information from Fox News and these televisions and newspapers that's going to paint prisoners in the worst light possible. Right? Mm-hmm. Let's think about this. You growing up in a society right now that teaches their children that police, They upstanding citizens, they do right, and a whole lot of them may. But you also got to teach them that it's a whole lot of police that don't do right.
Exactly.
That don't uphold the laws. You got to teach them that it's a whole lot of judges that don't do the right thing, that don't uphold the Constitution. There's a whole lot of correctional officers that don't do the right thing, that doesn't hold up to what they were supposed to do, what they intended to do. So when I'm seeing it on a mass level, and the person say, well, how can I help Carlos King? You can help me by signing your name to a petition. You can help me by sending me a letter asking me how have I changed, why have I changed, what do I desire in my life going forward. Who says penitence is not available for the incarcerated?
And Carlos, I'd like to have you give all that information to where they can go to sign the petition
and how they can
get in contact with you, if you can, real quickly.
Well, they can go to change.org and punch up Carlos King, and they can find the petition, or they can follow me on Facebook using Carlos King 122772, and they can write me at jpay.com by punching up my inmate number, which is 222974. I would love to conversate about you. It's the one thing that I realize in life, that you can go anywhere in the corner to find some information about her. I can go to somewhere in Boston and find something out about Leona, but it may not be true, and it may be true. But the only reason I'm going to get the real facts if I talk to Leona.
Come talk to Carlos King. Exactly.
Don't look at my case. Don't look at what they're saying about me. Come hear me. Come listen to me. Understand my perspective. Certain things that was not discovered in my trial. They never talk about the mitigating circumstance.
Thank you for using GTL.
And I also want to bring up, as Carlos was talking about, people can do good in prison. And there is it was in the news on ABC, and his name was Joel Kasten. And he is incarcerated, and he was recently elected for a government position, and he is in Washington, D.C. These are people from the prisons that are doing so much good. And I will tell you, as far as maximum security goes, many people want to remain in maximum security for a few reasons. And one mainly is because of single cell status. And the government has even recently realized that a lot of these incarcerated individuals are trying to keep their single cell statuses. So now they force them to double cell. There are thousands of cells that are empty in the penal system across the country. But yet they force these people to double sell, as they did in slavery time with the Africans coming over to this country. They would force them to be in these boats, so many in these boats that the boats were sinking. So many slaves died because these overloaded boats. And that's what they're trying to do in the penal system. They're trying to fill these prisons so tight to keep room all the time for more that they want to bring in. Again, this is prisons for profit, and this is exactly the ignorance of our government leaders. When it comes to maximum security, this is why they have these maximum security. There are some prisoners that are very, very violent. They should never come out. And my petition to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities does not pertain to these people that are so violent they will never be reformed. But even if they are in long-term residential treatment facilities, for the rest of their lives, they are getting the appropriate treatment, which they are not getting in the prisons today throughout the country.
Using GTL.
Hello.
Hello, with Carlos King is back with us.
Yes.
Okay, Carlos, I was just talking about an inmate that's a prisoner from Washington, D.C., that was actually recently elected to a position, and he was on the ABC News, and his name was Joel Caston, Caston, and he's seeking redemption through politics. He's been in for 3 decades, 30 years. He's 44 years old, convicted of murder as a teenager. This is what I want the audience to know, that these things happen, but it doesn't mean that these people have to be penalized for the rest of their lives when there's so much good that they have to offer. This is God's work. God has a purpose. For whatever reason, we don't understand it now, but God does have a purpose. And Carlos, if you will, continue.
Now, that's just one act of penitence and redemption or restorative justice or however you want to look at it that you could find in prison if you desire. Then the MDOC or any prison system for that matter in the country of the United States right now is not trying to rehabilitate prisoners. Prisoners are trying to rehabilitate themselves. And the reason why they're trying to rehabilitate themselves, we are coming in contact with things that wasn't afforded to us in the community, or we never had time, or nobody ever point us in the right direction. Reading a book, educating ourselves, not just on the school system, but educating ourselves on our system in terms of what we went through, our plight as black people, and so forth. We got to realize and understand that. Just imagine when you think about citizenship, when you think about, I spoke about this last time on your air, but I want to go in deep detail real quick just for a second. When you think about citizenship, you think about the United States Constitution, the 14th Amendment, which was created in 1868, that says black people, we are citizens, we are able to get all the things that's afforded to everybody else under this, right? So if you think about the things that we can get. This amendment, according to the Constitution, was intended to protect the rights of free slaves by guaranteeing all citizens equal protection under the law. Please understand that not only was this law was written in 1868, but still today, we don't enjoy the fruits of that, right? So when you're thinking about the voting rights, you hear that today, man, it's everywhere. Every Republican state, especially in the South, and don't take these Northern Democrats. And I'm gonna just say that real talk. They you know, these are the ones they throw rocks and hide their hand. But the system still exists because if they really felt as if we should have this power, we should be able to vote, then they would stand up more for us than they do now, right? So when you think about the 14th Amendment, now you got to come to the 15th Amendment. What was the point of the 15th Amendment? The 15th Amendment gave black people the right to vote. But again, why would we need the 15th Amendment to give us the right to vote when the 14th Amendment was supposedly to give us citizenship, right? We don't think about this. But we go read the Constitution of the United States and understand you got three branches of government. When I was going to school, I didn't understand the different branches of government. You know, you got the, you know, Article 1, you got the Congress. Article 2, you got the executive branch, which is the president. And Article 3, you got the judicial branch, which is the Supreme Court. I didn't understand these breakdowns, right? But then how can each branch, they supposed to work cohesively, they supposed to be together, that's so far apart? One person to say one thing, but the other one to do another thing. Yeah, black people are able to vote, but the Supreme Court say, well, Congress got to do this and Congress got to do that. You feel what I'm saying? So when I think of the state of affairs, just think about being in prison, right? For a second, just think about this. Think about being punished for crime. And not only was you punished for a crime, but you come to prison and they punish you all over again. But I'm thinking that being in prison, being on so many restrictive measures, that was punishment enough. Not being able to hug your family, not being able to go to dinner, not being able to go to shopping, not to be able to do the things that a citizen free is able to do should be a punishment enough. But nah, that's not enough. So you come in prison and you run into these people that want to punish you some more. They writing you tickets. Erroneous tickets. They stepping on your neck. They producing all kind of bad situations to hinder you from growing and becoming a man as you desire to be, right? They come to work specifically to torture you mentally. And if you think I'm lying, all you got to do is talk to somebody that's in prison, that's been in prison for a long time, right? Yes, and I'm going to give you a prime example what I'm talking about. Yesterday, true story. Yesterday, they called me up front for an ID. You know, in prison, they give you an ID. You got to keep this ID on you at all times. You can't be without this ID. Anyway, I done had this ID so long that it was tore. You know, normal wear and tear the ID. So I had tape on it. I tried to fix it, whatever I had to do to keep the ID, right? So they called me up there to give me a new ID. And they issued me a disbursement form to try to get me to pay for the ID, $5. They wanted to take $5 out of my account to pay for this ID when they should have just gave me the ID because it's normal wear and tear. But when I rejected signing my signature on that piece of paper, the Lieutenant Monty, threatened me with an infraction. He told me, if I don't sign my name on this disbursement, then tomorrow he's going to write me an infraction. So when tomorrow came, they called me up there. No doubt, he wrote me an infraction. Destruction of misuse of state property. So basically what he's trying to say, that I intentionally just sat on my bunk or where I was and destroyed the ID. Don't even make sense, right? So these are just one level. And then when you try to talk to them, there is no talking because all on work in concert. Each one on work, they're going to bounce each other. They're going to make sure they stand each other up. So who's the bad guy? Now I got to go through another process of having a hearing. Now I got to go through the hearing process to see if I can prove my case. But my thing is, the tickets prevents me from coming home. Because now they say, oh, well, he's catching tickets. And people, what people don't know is no different than when the police come up and approach a black man or a woman, and he pulled his gun out before he tried to have a conversation. They pulled their pen down in prison. They don't even want to talk to you. You would think that they would have some dialogue for you. You would think that they would have some conversation to try to encourage you. Do better. Do this. Or do not at all. But they write these frivolous misconducts every single day. And society don't know about it. Society don't know that they come to work. I'm afforded one meal a day. I mean, one meal through lunch, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Per policy, everybody, even the police, correctional officers, eat in prison. Everybody's entitled to only one meal. But just imagine, they get 2 and 3 meals right in your face. Just imagine that. So you know what that is, right? It's theft. Because now somebody doctoring the books to say otherwise, so they steal it from the state. But don't nobody say nothing. You know why? Because they all brothers and sisters.
You know, I've actually brought this to the attention of politicians as far as the bogus misconducts and all the writing up of all these bogus things. And also, there's so many others that I brought up to the politicians. And to me, if they don't do anything about it, you know, they're just as bad, even worse than the Department of Corrections, because we know what to expect in the Department of Corrections in these prisons. But we expect our legislative members to take heed as to what they're hearing and actually do some investigating or continuous random visits to the prisons to meet with these prisoners. But unfortunately, this has not happened, and it's sad. It's sad because the very people that should know don't do anything about it.
Just imagine this, Leona. When a man comes to prison without knowledge, wisdom, and understanding, and through his introspection, accountability, suffering, finds remorse, empathy, and compassion, why won't society allow this man to be redeemed? Just think about that. A man comes to prison for committing a crime. He comes to prison and he chooses to be better and to take responsibility, become remorseful, become accountable, and come out of prison and be better. Right? Not only do they want to prevent you from getting out of prison, but now they want to make it even harder when you do get out of prison. So just think about this. Let's have a discussion on this topic, because people don't talk about this topic. So when you think about voting rights, when you think about felons, and you think about crime, I would think that when you finish your sentence, every right that you lost when you committed a crime are supposed to be given back to you. So why couldn't I vote if I was out there? Right? Why couldn't I, if my family was in danger and a man broke in my house to try to kill my family, why couldn't I have a gun to protect my family? Why do you make it so hard for a person that's been redeemed? He paid his debt to society. His society is paid. He has spent 25, 30 years in prison. I would think he could come home and be a human being again. But no, he's still demonized. He's still prevented from being a human being. He is still prevented from enjoying the qualities that somebody else enjoys. So when you think about castration, when you think about subjugation, you think about the black man and the black woman that suffers constantly, even if they inside or outside of prison. Because even if you got barbed wire fences surrounding you and they visible to you, what about all the barbed wire fences surrounding Leona and the rest of the community that's invisible? See, we don't see those fences. A person will grow up and he'll be like, well, it didn't exist in my community. You just one example. You can't tell everybody to pull themselves up at their bootstraps. You can't say just because you made it, somebody else can make it. He may not got or she may not got what you got. We can't attribute the same math to everybody to come up with the same solution. If everybody could be strong, what would the weak look like? If everybody could be wise, who would be the fools? If everybody can be God-fearing people, what would Satan people look like? This is the balance that must be created. This is why you got a high self and a lower self, right? Now, you got to choose what you feed. You got to choose if you're going to believe in God. When Satan talked to God, he told God, I'm gonna attack the righteous from every position, right? He didn't say, I'm going to leave them alone and let them grow and let them be in God's bosom and let them enjoy the fruits of your land. No, attack them to see if they're strong. I'm going to attack them and see if their faith is impenetrable. I'm going to attack them to see if they still going to believe it. Right? It's no different from right now. When you grab hold of your integrity, you can't let nobody take it from you. When you grab hold of your self-esteem, you can't let nobody take it from you. When you grab hold of your purpose, you can't let nobody take it from you. Because when you allow them to take that from you, you never understood it to begin with. So when I say that, I say this. I've been in prison, and I've changed from who I used to be. Today, I'm no longer reflective of who I was when I walked inside the precinct as an 18-year-old male that didn't understand himself. Today, I'm a man. I'm not going to say I'm a grown man, because grown implies that I'm through growing. So I'm going to say I'm a growing man because there's so much more that I need in my arsenal. But after,
you have 1 minute remaining.
But as I live every single day, I give everything within myself to be free. Freedom don't just mean for me, free from incarceration. Freedom for me means freedom from any impediment that impede my progress. That's true freedom. And if you ain't got that, then you ain't living.
And, you know, you mentioned about the spirits, the evil and good. In the book of Ephesians, in the Bible, in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12, it says, for our struggles is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the high places in this world. So what Carlos is talking about is true, because you can serve either one or two masters, but you won't be serving in sincerity. So we have to look at the people that are out there with the evil spirit within them.
Thank you for using GTL.
With the spirit evil within them. Or we can look at those that are serving God himself, the Most High, because the Most High is going to win out. Whether this government likes it or not, the Most High is going to win out. And these people who are incarcerated, who do not deserve to be serving all these life sentences and long sentences and treated inhumanely, these people are human beings. They are children of God, whether fallen children of God or the lambs amongst the wolves within those prison bars. But I will say that we have to make a choice as to where we want to stand in helping these people. We can either get them in long-term residential treatment facilities, because we know we have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses, and we know we have an epidemic of substances. And a lot of people turn to substances to hide the traumatic childhood or the traumatic experiences they have gone through, which led them to stumble and incarcerate. So we have to look at these things. And Carlos King, he's telling it like it is. And he himself said, there's a lot of people in prison who are doing nothing with themselves, but there's also a lot of people in prisons who are trying to do something, and they're being oppressed.
They're using GTL.
They're being deprived of doing anything that's productive in the prison. This is not their fault. When we have prison officials that want to keep them at looking so bad to the public and crying out that these people are lazy and they don't want to do anything, and this is why they need to be harsh on crime and all these things. Don't listen to the prison officials. As Carlos King said, find out from the sources. Go into the prisons. Meet with these prisoners. Talk with these prisoners. Try to find out the truth, because we hear about fake news, and that's a lot of what we get with the media, and that's a lot of what we get with prison officials. They will lie through their teeth when they are doing so much criminal activities themselves. So we are going to bring Carlos King back on again. Carlos, are you with us?
Yes, ma'am. This is my last phone call, so I want to end it on this note. I truly appreciate everybody that came out to listen. I truly do. I truly appreciate you, Leona, for having me, for hosting me, for sharing my story. But I want to tell each and one, every one of you, this is something that I truly live by. As God lights the path that will bring your life success, his benevolence will give you strength, courage, realization, and determination to stand up against anyone that opposes your transformation into a greater and more beautiful you. Don't never let nobody put you in a box and attribute their ideas of who you should be and where you should go. Hold yourself to a greater standard, as I have done. No matter how hard adversity has produced my greatness. And what I mean by adversity has produced my grace, without the adverse circumstances, I would have never found the Carlos King that is talking to you right now in this manner. My sense of direction, my sense of purpose, and my sense of health cannot be taken from me. Nothing they do can take that from me. And I just want you listeners to understand and remember that we can never compromise our integrity for a pursuit that will leave us void of our value, nor can we minimize our greatness for a light that will not shine longer than a minute. We got to find out what we desire to be in life. The incarcerated are suffering at alarming rates, people. I'm talking about when I'm talking about suffering, I'm talking about suffering at alarming rates. So many of these guys can't get no letter, get no phone call. They can't go to the store to get necessities such as hygienic products, soap, deodorant, toothpaste. They got to rely on the compassion of brothers like me and other brothers who aid in the system because they don't have no family members. They can't get no job because they don't got no education. And then the job that they do, they paying so much restitution, so much court costs. Just imagine coming to prison. You committed a crime because you was a poor person. You already didn't have nothing. So just imagine when you go through court and when they sentence you to prison, they tell you you got $10,000 restitution. You got $20,000 court fees. They taking everything from your account for $6. Every month, if any money you get, they're taking everything but $6. Just imagine that. When soap costs 70 cents for better, deodorant costs $4, lotion costs $4. How can you get everything? You can't. They make it so difficult and so hard for the poor that's incarcerated, but you don't understand that. You don't see that because they making you believe that, oh, we got it good. They got cable television in prison. I don't got cable television. They get 3 meals a day. I got to pay for my 3 meals a day. But just imagine, you wouldn't even feed a dog these 3 meals that I got to eat every day.
My loved one has been an indigent for the last 25 years because twice, I bought him a television. Twice they took it from him. Prison officials took it from him. Whatever I got, they would take. He finally told me years ago not to send any money anymore. He's been living in poverty for years now. And what little he did have, they took from him almost 2 years ago. Because of this pandemic, he's been in a cell 22 hours a day with nothing, no TV. They gave his law books away to the prison library. They've got most of his clothes, most of his books. He's been living indigently, and the politicians, once again, and lawyers have been informed of it, and no one wants to help. You know, it's a situation where they try to pick and choose who they want to help, those that they're going to benefit from, or those that are related or connected to someone that they know. People today don't get the help unless it's who you know, and that's the problem. And that's why I bring justice. I try to bring justice into those prisons with all of you, because I learned from my own situation, my own personal situation. I have learned that there are so many people like him, so many people like him out there that are suffering so much, and yet they're doing so good. This is about oppression. And there are so many people in prison that don't have anything. And talk about family. Yes, my family, my siblings, if my parents were alive, my parents would have been right by his side. But the thing is, his own aunts and uncles, his own cousins have deserted him. His best friend, who he served in as his best friend, who had him in his wedding, they grew up together, is a politician. And has completely ignored trying to help him, trying to even go to see him.
That's how it happens. Saying that, Leona, that's how it happens. And I'm sorry your son got to go through that, but I'm seeing that I'm going through it myself.
Exactly.
And my heart goes out to you, man. And my prayer is going to be for your son to find his way out of there, to be able to find some confident release through the compassion and the empathy of somebody else as we talk and discuss.
My prayers are with all of you, because I'll tell you, as I said, God has a purpose for what's going on, even with my son's situation. So I want you to know, and I want everybody to know, that no matter how much this government tries to oppress, and not only the government, but the people in society who have the better than now attitude, I want them all to know God has a purpose behind everything, and you're going to all see a miracle. You're going to see a miracle happening within the penal system, throughout the country and the world. And it's going to be, as it says in the Bible, the last will be first. So, Carlos, when you say these things, so many people have thanked me for what I'm doing, and I don't want the thanks. What I want is the glory to go to God, because the Most High is behind it all.
So, and I give all the glory to God. God is was the one who saved my life. And I wrote this poem called The Greatest Love. And The Greatest Love was talking about my freedom. And I would like to share that with your audience.
Please do.
And it says, looking into the stars was like staring straight into your face. I never knew how miserable I would be until you disappeared without a trace. Now I'm sitting here all alone, reminiscing all the memories you have left inside of my heart. To me, it doesn't matter how far you have gone, because distance can never tear us apart. I will love you for a lifetime, even if I never see your face again. I will love you until it's my time to go, when my very last breath seeps from within. For you are and will always be the greatest love I've ever known. So from time to eternity and eternity back to time, my love for you will always be shown. It broke my heart when you left, but I truly appreciate all the times you were here. So you may never have the pleasure of reading this poem, but my love for you will always be near. You are the love that I will never lose sight of. As long as the stars continue to stand in the sky, I would think of you every chance that I get, and it may hurt a little bit that I may begin to cry, but I would never ever forget, and I would never ever let you go. As long as I live, you will live inside of me, and my love for you will continue to show. For every day and through every night, you will always be the beauty that sleeps on my mind. You will be my dream, my joy, and the greatest love that can never get lost with time. I love you from the bottom of my heart, and nothing inside of me will ever change. You are connected to the dynamics of my soul, and my joy for you will continue to reign. For you are the greatest love I've ever known, and the greatest love you will always be. So if it's many miles away or up close and personal, a part of you will always travel with me. Freedom.
Amen. That was beautiful. That was beautiful, Carlos. You know, I just wish that so many people in society would just listen to these things and put their hearts right into the middle of all of these situations, because it could be them. And unfortunately, when it happens to the wealthy, somehow, because of the finances, their loved ones get away with it. But I just know that when you read that, when you read that, it was from the heart. And everything that you have talked about today has been emotional, has been heartfelt. And I just hope the audience has gotten something from this interview with you. And I want you, once again, before you do have to leave, is to give all your information once again and any ideas or thoughts that you may want to share with the audience.
All right, my name is Carlos King. You can write to me on jpay.com by using my inmate number, 222-974, or you can send me a letter via mail by using the address 4269 West M80, Kincheloe, Michigan, Kincheloe, Michigan, 49784. Or you can follow me on Facebook at Carlos King 122772, or you can check out my blog, Freedom Is My Remedy, .blogspot.com. Everything that I do today and who I am today is because God blessed me with his mercy, and he allowed for people to come into my life that showed me kindness. That kindness enabled me to find the strength to stand up, even when I've been laying down all my life. I refuse to lay down anymore. I refuse to keep my mouth closed. I refuse to remain expressionless. I want you to know my suffering. I want you to know my truth, so I can inspire you, if it's just one of you, to understand my plight and understand that I'm worthy. I didn't say deserving, because I feel like nobody is deserving, but I'm worthy of your compassion. I'm worthy of your respect. I'm worthy of your attention, and I'm worthy of your kindness. When you look into the mirror, don't just see a person, see a community. See the community that suffers, that don't stand in the mirror, but they're in the mirror of your heart. Whether you my sister, my mother, my brother, my nieces, my nephews, my friends, my cousins, whoever has aided me in my journey of 30 years in prison. I'll be 49 2 days after Christmas. And I love being a Christmas baby because I feel like I was just extra special. And right now, I truly feel like I'm extra special, because you are listening to me. You had me in your heart, you had me in your home, and it's evidence because 1,587 of you have already signed a petition to get me out of prison. You can find the petition on change.org by punching up Carlos King, and you can support the petition by donating $20, $30 to keep the petition going until I'm free. I am on a constitutional violation. I shouldn't be in prison. I should have been out of prison a long time ago. Please help me find my freedom and know that I'm going to do something great with my freedom. I ain't going to do nothing good. I'm going to do something great for my freedom because I want to live my life being altruistic. Altruistic means selfless. I'm no longer self-identified. I'm no longer caught up in myself. I'm no longer seeking validation for nothing. I'm trying to give what I've gained through the measure of my suffering to somebody else that can make some joy out of it, that can take my experience and enrich themselves so that they don't have to suffer as I have. I truly believe that I've suffered and the incarcerated suffer for a whole lot of you because every day and every night we wake up and go to sleep knowing that we're in prison. We wake up and go to sleep knowing that ain't nobody thinking about us. But I would like to think that somebody is thinking about us. I would like to...
You have 1 minute remaining.
Sitting at their table writing me a letter or sitting at their phone call waiting for my call. I would like to think that God is the most merciful and the most compassionate. And when he said it could be done, and I'm not going to doubt him because I've seen his works. I've seen his bountifulness. And I ask for you to come into my heart, come into my home, and take a listen, and take a gander, or take a read at something I've done. Thank you. I truly appreciate each and every one of you.
Carlos, I want to thank you, and we're going to have you back on after the holidays just for an update on everything. And
Yes, ma'am. And
I hope that people have really gotten something out of this interview. I want to thank you for coming
yes,
on. I want to thank you for sharing light. And again, I want to encourage the audience to start looking at the voting rights to be restored of all these incarcerated individuals, because that would give them an opportunity of freedom. And the only reason that they would take away the voting rights.
Thank you for using GTL.
Carlos, thank you once again. And Taisha?
Yes, ma'am.
I want to thank you for being there for him, for standing by him, for bringing him on. I'm going to keep you and your family in prayer over the holidays because he is deserving of his freedom, just as so many others are. And I just want to thank you for being one of those family members that do stand by your loved one. There are so many in prison today whose family have given up on them. A lot of them because of pride. They don't want to be associated with anyone incarcerated because that's the way that they were brought up. But they don't realize there's a lot of people incarcerated that was stumbled by society, by members of society as well. So I hope you have a very Merry Christmas. And I want to play this, before I do anything, I want to play this this video that this Caucasian male put out there a while ago, and I think it's very important that everyone hear it, because this is the second time I have heard a video put out by a Caucasian person who has stated this. And here we go.
School movement in the 70s and 80s to try to end run integration. These people who followed people like the segregationist Jerry Falwell Sr., whose son now runs Liberty University, are reacting to the first black presidency. And their reaction was to elect the most unqualified president to replace perhaps the best president this country's had in my lifetime, the most erudite, the most educated, the most well-spoken, the best temperament we've had in a president that I can remember, a true leader. And it's almost like a parody of something like Paradise Lost or Satan's Fall from Heaven, whatever it might be. The reaction against this wonderful figure of President Obama, who endured an 8-year slow motion lynching by the white mob, the oligarchs, the alt-right, the white supremacists, and all the rest of it. It's almost like a parody. You know, I don't even think Shakespeare would have cooked up something like this, to go from someone so luminous and so bright and so well qualified, but also just so deeply human, the good husband of a wife, a faithful father. get this adulterous swine, this philanderer, this molester of women, this person with criminal impulses who lies his way through life, this con man, this multiple bankrupt, this person who's opened this whole Pandora's box of a relationship with our sworn enemy in Russia, and the murderer, the mass murderer, and the assassin and killer, Vladimir Putin, who kills his opponents, who jails them, who beats them. To go from Barack Obama to Trump is really mind-boggling, but it's only explicable by the depth of the racism. The magnifying glass that Trump's election puts on our country goes to show that, yes, indeed, 40% or so of the American public are uneducated, racist fools who occupy this white underclass that, by the way, is where all the so-called real welfare mothers live. White older males my age are the people who are essentially out there sucking up dollars from the federal system, from Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security and unemployment benefits and disability, huge amounts of white males on disability, in comparison to the productive black community that the whites like to disparage, who are forging ahead economically. And that in spite of the mass incarceration of the new Jim Crow, where male black men have been locked up on the dubious pretext of minor drug charges by the millions to try to control that population out of black ascendancy into our culture. And so I just want to point out, you know, as we struggle, as we resist, let's remember the truth of the matter. The entire fiasco of Trump is made possible by the resentment of white fools, from the billionaire oligarchs and people like Jeff Sessions and Mike Pence, all the way down to the know-nothing twits flying Confederate flags on the back of their stupid pickup trucks, roaring up and down highways. This entire stupid movement, this fart in the wind, which will blow away and be replaced by a multicultural, decent, fair society that will look at this moment with mind-boggling propensity, saying, what on earth was this about? Just remember this. It is reaction to a first black president. And otherwise, none of this is explicable, especially the fact that the Republican Party continues to go along with this mentally unstable, unfit fool. It can only be explained by the continuing reaction and obstruction that they cannot get out of the habit of. They're still obstructing the Obama presidency, even though Obama is no longer president. Go figure. Thank you. My name is Frank Schaefer.
No, we didn't get the whole thing, but there is so much more to it. And we have had another video, which I cannot find right now, that explained exactly what this Caucasian male had mentioned about God's people. So when people think about racism and hatred, when they think about vengeance and retaliation, when they think about power and fame and corruption, one of the things that they fail to forget, they fail to remember, I'm sorry, they fail to remember that there is a higher power. And for those of you that still go to church on Sunday or still go to the mosque or wherever, because when I talk about God, I talk about all gods. I talk about the Most High, who is called different names. Some call him Jehovah. Some call him Yahweh. Some call him Allah. Some call him, they just have so many different names. And so when I talk about God, I want people to remember there is a God. There is the Most High. And that Most High is looking down upon all of you. And as we see all around us, the changes in the weather, we see the changes in the attitudes of the hearts. We see so many things, earthquakes, just like it mentions in the Bible, earthquakes, tornadoes, hurricanes. We see floods. We see fires. It's right at our doorstep right now. So I want everybody to know you can't change your mind at the very last second when that time of judgment comes. So I hope you will have gotten something out of this interview with Carlos King today, and that you will think not only about Carlos King, but about all others like him too, that are incarcerated, that should not be incarcerated, and those that are incarcerated that are trying so hard to do the right thing and they're being oppressed by prison officials and COs, correctional officers. We need to look at the lies that are going on in the media, the lies that are going on coming from the prison. We need to look at these individuals not as objects, but as God's children, the lambs amongst the wolves, the fallen, the stumbled, whatever it may be. So this Christmas, when everybody's celebrating with gifts, make sure your gift is beyond just a materialistic gift. Let's see that gift work into something more positive. Stop calling your politicians, especially those who are fighting for justice, who are fighting for criminal justice or prison reform. And you can find them just by going to your state website and typing in legislative members for prison reform or for criminal justice reform. Find out who they are, then call them. It only takes a few minutes to dial that phone or click on that phone number and call them and just say, we're calling because we want to see these prisoners get justice. We want to see them looked at individually. We want to see them free. We want to see them receive residential treatment facility. We don't want to see them just caged like animals as objects. And I hope all of you have gotten something from this and will do something positive this Christmas to show God that you are a property of his and not the property of the Satan, the satanic, the evil. And let's look at all those incarcerated individuals who were innocent, who were given put to death, only to find out later down the years that they were innocent. And people that have served years and years in prison for a crime they did not commit. Think about all these things. And we are close. I thank you all for listening in. And again, I thank Carlos and his sister for making this possible for us to have this interview today, right around the holidays. Thank you so much. And I want to hear from you again in another month or two and get an update on that petition. Thank you so much. We are going to end this episode now, and I thank everyone for listening in.